Future Commerce is brought to you by Shopware. Shopware is an open commerce platform trusted by more than 70,000 brands to deliver the experiences that their customers need, both today and in the future. Learn more at shopware.com/FC. This Future Commerce podcast is supported by Divvy, the free corporate card and expense management platform that combines seamless software and a smart Visa business card. Try it for free today at getdivvy.com/futurecommerce. That's getdivvy, DIVVY.com/futurecommerce. Future Commerce is brought to you by 3Kit. 3Kit is the visual commerce platform that accelerates growth by enabling customers to show their configurable products online. 3Kit, show more, sell more. Visit 3Kit online today at 3Kit.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about the next generation of commerce. I'm Brian.
I'm Philip. Kendall, you're back. We're glad to have you back on the show.
Round two. Let's do it.
And it's been a little while since we had you. We'll cover a few things. I want some hot takes up front, though. So before we get into it, Kendall, you're best known for, you know, the work that you do in the social space, especially like influencer. I know that there's been a lot of discussion lately in sort of changing the taxonomy. You know, we call it creator economy now. Mm-hmm. And I just hosted a panel at Grow last week. You know, I think one thing that just kind of blew my mind was we had Stephen Vigilante from Olipop, and he was on that panel. He said, you know, TikTok came in and sort of democratized the creator economy by making video views and all of that very public. Mm-hmm. Since the last time we talked in particular, all of that has sort of changed and been reoriented now. What are you seeing right now today in the space? What's going on?
I would say, well, number one, I'm jealous that I wasn't at that panel because I had intentions of going, but FOMO. Then number two, I would say, yeah, I mean, I think like I agree with like what Steve said, because I think it made things so much more obviously out there and you can't really hide anything. Like, right, we see on Instagram now, like all creators are hiding everything except their reels. Because nothing is performing. And I think also like it's just changed the, I don't want to say it's even like changed the landscape, but maybe it has, it's kind of like proof is in the pudding to that the number of followers that you don't have like doesn't ring true. Like just because you have a milli, like doesn't really mean a whole lot. If you have 5K and you're pulling in numbers, like it speaks volumes on platforms like TikTok. And I think also like I just had shout out to Danny from #paid since I just saw him, but like we had a great conversation about like TikTok and like our thought process there of just like, you know, when a video pops off, like how many, where are these people coming from when they're like accounts are growing at that steady of, or like that fast of a pace from like a video that hit like 2 million views. And like, where are those views coming from? And so it's like, even with that though, like the creators who might have like these tighter communities or smaller followings who are bringing in numbers at the same time, you almost have to be like, but where are those numbers coming from? So I think even though platforms like TikTok have exposed the true, like for the most part, analytics, like, right, there's still things on the back end that like, we don't really know, like where, unless we ask the creator. So it's like the watch time of the video. To know like, okay, if a brand is going to pay this creator, like it should be 6 seconds because their average like stopping point is 6 to 7 seconds, which is like standard. And then also it's like the viewership, right? Like if all your viewers are from like Canada, China, and India, but you're a product that sells in the US, then.
Right. Yeah. There's still some things that you'd have to tease out in that relationship. Yeah.
But I would say like, yeah, I mean, like obviously, you know, with a lot of the brands that I work with and just like brands that I talk to, it's always about TikTok right now. And whether that's from the standpoint of like, how do we get big? Or it's like, how do we get into the hands of people that are big? But I think that goes into like, you know, a spiel that I can always go on forever around like proper influencer seeding and like gifting with no expectation, because usually that's when the best things happen. So
well, that actually opens up a whole second level of conversation. Brian, what would happen if all of our podcast numbers and listen numbers were made public tomorrow?
I mean, for us?
I think a lot of people would be surprised at how big we are. That's
probably.
It's shocking, actually. Like, I see all these flexes everywhere.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, I mean,
that's like, but that's the point too, where it's like, it's some of these things where I think, let's see, I forgot if I had said it to you guys last time, but for example, like there was a brand that I'm still on, and Kris Jenner posted to many people. If you're like newer to the space, you'd be like, holy shit, Kris Jenner posted, we're about to pop off. No, that's not the case. Why? Because like, personal brand is diluted with like a lot of people who have no interest in what she's actually talking about. They're there for like the family drama and stuff like that. So like their real communities aren't actually that big.
Which is why I feel like you have to balance the why of audience. Like, I think that's always been a problem, is we spend so much time analyzing numbers, but we forget about like, okay, what is this content?
What are they there for?
What is it there for? And that's actually an analysis of the creator themselves.
It's funny, actually. Eli Weiss said that the other day. It was like, you know, for every 100 B2B content engagements, like 80 of them are people hate watching so that they can like rail against you on Twitter. It's super true. Like, this is like super true. Coming back around on that. Go ahead. You were saying something.
Oh no, just I'm curious. And I'm not shifting gears too far here when I said, like, I think one of the reasons why Elon is pulling out of Twitter isn't actually as much about the value of the stock price, but it was a fight over fake followers and what fake accounts meant on the platform. And I do wonder, you know,
are you really buying the election fraud discussion now? Like, we didn't have this. We haven't had this conversation yet. You buy that's the not, actual problem.
No, not at all. Not at all. We're not going down this discourse. No, I'm just talking about fake accounts.
I just black out and like wake up in the middle of a different conversation? Where did this come from, Brian?
No, but I think that there is like an element of that where it's like, even if they're not fake, is there any discernible difference between a fake account and one that's just there for like whatever? Like,
I think also this is something I used to do on my like food account, was I would always like every month I would wipe the slate clean of like all those people. So I'd literally go through, it would take me like an hour, and I would literally just like type in every letter of the alphabet and every like number combination and like all those like iPhone giveaway, like those like types of accounts, and just get rid of them, because like that is used against you. People just don't really realize that. But it's also like, I would want to have, I don't want my numbers. I'd rather cut my own numbers so that like it's tighter. Like, I don't care how good it looks. I want it to perform well.
This is such an interesting discussion. I was talking about this with Abby on the Future Commerce team last week when we were at Grow, and we were talking about this concept of like digital pruning. And this is, if you're, I'm not a gardener. I know, Brian, you have a pretty prolific garden. But when you're in the, you don't go in and you prune one plant, right? You go in and it's a process, and you do it with some regularity. You go in, I assume, and you prune everything while you're in pruning, right? You've got the tool in hand. Is that right, Brian?
It depends on the season. You don't prune your apples and roses at the same time necessarily.
No, but you do prune them regularly. Okay, whatever. the point being, I love it. I love when an analogy goes wrong. This is why I should never analogize anything. The point being, it's a regular process that has a cadence, and you should be constantly tending to that garden.
Yes.
And when you tend to the garden, like, you're going to realize there are things that were growing up and cropping up along the way that you didn't, that were, you know, harming you. Like, it was choking out the good stuff as opposed to, you know, allowing the good stuff to thrive. It's a really interesting behavior.
It is. It should be something that happens on a regular basis. To that point, like, it's a rhythm. It's a discipline, really. Cause I'll tell you, pruning is a lot of work. And so, that should be one of the questions that brands ask creators of, like, what's your discipline around keeping it real?
I've done a lot of like whitelisting with brands on my own account But also at the same time, like there's a love-hate relationship from, at least from when I was the creator that brands are whitelisting through, there's like this love-hate relationship with it because yeah, it's like free traffic to me. And a lot of it is like targeted perfectly. And like there are people I want following me, but at the same time, you obviously get like the people that you don't really want following you or that doesn't make sense. So it's just, I think that's like what spurred it in me because I was like, cool, I'm getting all these followers, but it's like, okay, like this person makes no sense. Or then you see like one of the random accounts, like one post and like zero followers and like following like 5,000 people. Like they're not going to see stuff.
No, that's that can't be real. Although I do have a question for you. Like, what about overpruning? Because I've seen some, you know, some level of like purism among like certain spaces where it's like they just only want to engage with the white hot center, and like anyone that's not engaged, like super passively engaged, gets cut off. Like,
brands that only follow like one person?
Right. Or like, yeah, exactly. Like over pruning of your community.
I think that's like too much. And that's just me. Like I know like so many people are different on that standpoint. But yeah, no, I mean like the ratios of things, right? Like, do I have like my threshold personally? Yeah, like mine's usually like from a brand side. Usually like the first boundary to me is like 1,000 people, but that also depends on where you sit. But it's also like if I'm following anyone, it's like there is a reason. So if I go over this like a number I kind of set for myself, like I'm not going to be like, oh my god, I'm at 999. If I go over, like the whole world explodes. Like, no. But it's like also like to me, I think people who over prune like that, I feel like you're shooting yourself in the foot because you're supposed to be social on social. So it's like from the brand side too,
right?
Like it's not just like one side carries the whole relationship of like, we're putting out the content and we're reaching out to the creators and like, we're doing all this stuff. Like everyone come to us. It's like social platforms reward you putting in the work as well. Right. So you should be following the people who support you. You should be following the creators who you're working with and paying money or not paying money or that like just love you, like should be paying attention to like your super fan customers, like just stuff like that. Like I just think you're shooting yourself in the foot from like possible engagement standpoint because like the platform could be like they're not doing anything, like everything is going to them, you know. So I mean, I would use, even though it's not like a D2C brand, but for instance, like let's call it like Twitter or LinkedIn, right? Like if you go comment on someone's tweet, the odds of them going back to look at your account and like a few of your tweets or comment something or retweet something are going to be way higher. Same with LinkedIn. Like LinkedIn rewards people who are like, okay, cool. Like I commented on Phil's post and like I commented on my friend Tommy's post and like all this stuff, and it's going to boost it. Or if I like your post, like I know I just started getting more into like my own LinkedIn and like frequently posting on there. And yeah, I mean, it's just like a cascade effect. If I still have a post from like 3 weeks ago that just keeps getting every single day, just more and more and more because more people are wanting to engage with it. And then I just shoot it right back. Like
LinkedIn's really good about that, actually. It's a good one for that. Like they resurface stuff really well.
Yeah, that's been like my, if anything, the greatest platform to at least kind of take that information and say it again of it rewards people really well. Because I think also there's so much that brands need to do to exist on social, from the content creation side to now it's contracting out creators to help out on that content creation side, build out teams, because like one person's social team should not be a common thing anymore. That's a hot take. However, do I recognize that some brands cannot afford that option right now? Yes. But the goal should be to grow the team, not keep it to one person for X amount of years. And also giving them the resources that they need. But yeah, I just think it's one of those things where a lot of the brands are like, well, we have to focus so much on this. Like the last thing we should be doing is community. Like, but that's why brands are like, well, we don't have a community. And then they ask themselves why. And I'm like,
this is the reason why
at all.
You haven't invested in it.
Because content, I guess that's, content isn't community, but people think that content is community.
Well,
content,
that's because inherently
if you engage with the people on your content, you build community. If you are just posting and chilling and being like, toss the phone, like where?
Hey merchants, are you struggling? Are you struggling to provide an engaging experience to your customers because of the limitations of your current e-commerce platform? Or maybe do your merchandising and operations teams feel limited because they're experiencing friction and they're drowning in information overload and there's so much opportunity cost that's traded away because of repetitive work simply because you're working with a system that doesn't adapt to your needs? Or maybe everything just needs to be built from scratch. If so, Future Commerce wants to introduce you to Shopware. Shopware is an open commerce platform that's trusted by more than 70,000 brands to deliver the experiences their customers need, both today and in the future. Learn more today at shopware.com/FC. That's shopware.com/FC. Let me ask you a question, Kendall, because there's a... We're sort of like post-social in media, where it's inherently social, but I don't know that it counts as being like a form of like social circles anymore. Social circles, you know, certainly it started with the people you know, right? Yeah. And so there was the people you know, and then there's the people that you sort of know professionally. And then it became people that you didn't know, but now you're going to get to know. And that's sort of where Twitter was. And now TikTok is just about literally anyone but the people you know. Please don't show me anyone I know. And and so we've actually really, it's almost like transgressive in that it's this concept of community should evolve naturally by engaging in public discourse and media. But they don't equate to a community. So the question is really is, does creation of a community, and I use air quotes there because I have a thesis about it, but does the creation of a community, you know, sort of, is that undermined by the fact that most people are going to something like Twitter purely for entertainment and getting them to move out of the entertainment box into the, I get value from these people that I'm engaging with box is actually quite hard.
So really... Good question.
I feel like what you're saying, Philip, is that social media is literally just a publishing platform with different structures.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. I think it's one of those things too where it's becoming, I think the amount of platforms that are like either growing or people are trying to like jump on one, forget the others. Like there's just so many things that are not helping brands in the community building essence where you would think it would help, but like it doesn't because they're so spread thin. So I think it only goes back to like the idea of you don't need to be on everything at once.
It's true. Yeah.
Like just because like your competitors are on there or like people who are like minded, like you are on there, like you shouldn't be forcing your team's hand or like whoever it is running point on that to like be on the platform as soon as possible, because just because you're first doesn't mean you're going to one pop off in like 2 seconds. It also doesn't mean that like your quality is probably going to suck, to be quite honest, because you're rushing to something just to, in the hopes that like you beat everyone else out of it. But if you don't have the resources to back that up, then bad start. And then I would say like, yeah, I at least like from what I'm seeing right now, like talking to either brands that are looking at launching like later this year or brands that I've worked with for a year or 2 years, like it is just always like, okay, cool. Like we've built this out so much, you know, whether it's been completely organic and we haven't even turned on ads yet, or that we like kind of ran with ads first and like organic came with it, or they work hand in hand really well. And I think now it's just such a mention of like, a lot of people at least are coming to me and being like, we have this following, we don't know what to do with it, because it's like,
so that's a really interesting thing, because especially for e-commerce brands, like, right, yeah, brands that are making products and selling them to people, yeah, the what you do with it should result in some sort of commercial outcome, like they should be buying your product. But what I've witnessed, and maybe you can dispel my myth, because I'd love for you to do some myth busting with me, but what I believe exists in the world is what I call like a form of romanticism, where people sort of build these like little collections in their minds, like little mind museums of brands that fit certain categories. Like, so when mentions happen online, people rattle off like, oh, what's the best, you know, what's the best, you know, brand for olive oil? It's like seven, maybe three come to mind.
Yeah.
And they're going to get all the mentions. And I have a really hard time believing that every single person that slides into those mentions is a customer.
Yes. So
how do you get them to move from awareness? Like, I've heard from DTC Twitter for years that AIDA is dead. But how do you get people to move off of the awareness and the interest around a product and even the ability to like romanticize the fact that like they know the product exists in the world and someone else might be looking for it? So they're like going all the way to evangelism already on your behalf, but they're not going to buy it. So how do we move that? And how do you use social media to change that behavior? Because I think that's the thing that we're all trying to get at.
That was a Brian Lang question.
Out of nowhere again. I would say, let's see, man. I mean, that's something I thought about the other day too, because right, like you see everyone saying the same exact thing of like, what are the best picks on this website? Or like, if you're looking for blank, like what are your top favorites? And yeah, it's so hard where you almost want to write in parentheses, like if you're an investor or like you have some stance in this company, like please don't respond or like something like that. Because yeah, it's just like so hard to know, like from a like consumer facing, like if you were on D2C Twitter, like you would be like, oh, nice, nice, nice. And then you're like, oh, nice, nice, nice. Like,
yeah, like you like, know how these people all network together, but an average bystander doesn't. Right?
Yeah. And so like, I mean, that's a really interesting point with social. I think like, obviously Graza comes to mind because I think the one thing.
An olive oil brand that you were involved with, right?
Yes, I still work on it. So I head up social and influencer. And I've been on Graza since we launched January 11th, and I've been on that since October. And I would say like that it's one of the most like mind blowing projects to be on, and shout out Grace, 'cause I'm super grateful to work with her. But also because like one, I've learned so much, especially around retail. But then two, really about like what it means to have like these customers going into store and being like, holy shit, it's on the shelf, or like wanting to take a photo and send it. And like, these are people I don't know. These are people who just like love everything about the brand. And I think like, it's like one of those things where it's true. Like at least when Graza was starting out, it became big on D2C Twitter because like the branding is great. Right. But I think also it's one of those things where, yeah, it became like my goal and the team's goal was like, we are not that Instagram olive oil. We are not the TikTok olive oil. We just happen to be there. And I think what changed that is that when people were buying it, customers were buying it, and even people from the community were buying it and tasting it and said, oh my gosh, the quality of the product actually matches the branding. And both are great. And so I think it's like one, maybe this is a hot take, but it's like one, I think, I don't know how many products out there, but you know, a lot of products in any space are somewhat facades because you get pulled in by the branding and the great marketing and the product isn't great. And you can't really have people going to bat for you. But when you have, we all know like great marketing plus great product equals great success.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just that common sense. But I think it's just like, once you're able to get people in with like what they want to see these days from a customer standpoint, which is like something that is aesthetically pleasing, something that can like make them feel like they have something special or like it delivers a certain experience. So whether like for Graza, it's like makes their kitchen less messy. It looks nice on the counter. They feel like they're like part of like this new like design revolution. But then also it's like once you squeeze the oil out of the bottle, it's just like I don't see myself going back to anything else, or it's like, why was I using anything else before? And so, I mean, we get so many people who are just referring it out like crazy. I mean, most of the people in the ambassador program are customers, not even creators.
Oh, I mean, and that's so like important. There's I don't know that it's like new in the world. You know, I've certainly worked in a kitchen or two in my life where olive oil or an oil was in a squeeze bottle, but that's pretty novel already from a product perspective for the home, right? For the kitchen. And so I think that that's like one thing you sit up and take notice of is, oh, that's pretty interesting. I think the other thing is, having, I don't know, it felt like you had a really long ramp of a few months of awareness before the product mm-hmm. came.
Yes.
And I think that too many people rely on big bang social strategies and timed releases for, yes. you know, for seeding, that if it doesn't go off, it feels like a massive failure.
Correct. And I would even say to that, I mean, I've been on both sides. I would say Graz is the one that I've had the most time ever in, you know, even though I've been on the brand side of social for 2 years, but when I was working in restaurants, it's like, obviously I can't really seed your dishes through the screen right. or anything like that. But like, I had to get people to the physical location, which you could imagine is extremely stressful. And TBT. Wow. And I would say now for Graza, like that's the most lead time I've ever had. And that is the only way I ever want to operate going forward. Mm. Like, because I do well under pressure, but also at the same time, it's like, it just goes to show like how much time it really took for something to like generate impressions online. And then also to slowly start getting to the hands of the right people and then seeing like, is this going to work? Honestly, and so sure. that you're able to fix it by the time launch actually happens. But I've also been on the side where I got the phone call being like, hey, need you to start tomorrow. And it's like, when's the launch? 2 days from now. I have gone on those projects because it was fun. Would I recommend? Only in dire situations, but most likely no. Like it's super hard. And yeah, I think like that is the thing where, you know, then it goes down to like the way that you're seeding and the expectations set and what makes it seem like a failure to the brand, because that's usually either like an impression that was either ruined previously, I've realized at least, right? Because say X person who ran it before or in an agency was just like getting it out to get it out, but no thought to the people that they were getting it out. And the research wasn't fully done or the vetting wasn't fully done. But then it's also this expectation of how to treat the creator and if those are aligned with the person who is running the program, because right, like things are more expensive these days, but oh, yeah. at the same time, it's like, also, one, you shouldn't be afraid to give product out to the person who's running the program. So like my first question to someone, if they want me to handle influencer or seeding, is like, how much product can you give me? Because if it's like 10 units a month, you can't do anything with that. So that's like the first question I ever asked Andrew and Alan. And they were like, as much as you want within reason, right, of what our inventory allows. And so like,
what's a good amount for a product that's like Graza?
Really good question. So I would say it depends. I would say low end 25 a month, high end could get up to 100.
How do you identify who to get it to? What's your strategy?
My strategy is one, honestly, like keeping pulse on like, especially with TikTok, like who is really big, let's say in like all the cooking space overall, right? Like it doesn't obviously like with Graza, I think the one thing too that I would say, if I was a brand looking at it, it's like go outside of your niche of where you would usually see your product, because there's other ways that people can use it that just are not in where you are. So to most olive oil, people would think like, cool, go after like all the people who make pasta. And like, that's kind of it, right? It's like, if you make Italian food, like you're getting Graza, where it's like, cool, like you make barbecue, like you're getting olive oil. You make cakes for a living, you're getting the olive oil. You love skincare, you're getting the olive oil. Like I went so wide, but like deep at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Where now it's like, I won't lie, like yesterday, what is it? Sundays sometimes I like to catch up on, I'll catch up on work or get ahead for the week, either or. And so yesterday, like I had some downtime and I just shot out like DMs to like these insane chefs and food creators who like 2 years ago, I'd be like, oh, I'd be so lucky if they opened my message. And they're just opening it within like 10 minutes being like, oh, I've seen you all over. Because like people just know what the bottle looks like enough to say, I've always wanted to try it.
It's huge.
When it comes to identifying, it's just, I don't know. I think it's one, it's just, it's always such a hard question to answer, right? Because there's so many people that exist in all these niches.
Sure.
But it's like just doing your, I honestly, for me, it's like, it's a gut check.
Thank you to our sponsor, Divvy, the corporate card and expense management platform. Transform your complicated, exhausting, stressful, and manual expense management to being simple, automated, quick, and, dare I say, almost too easy. You can do that with Divvy. Try it for free today at getdivvy.com/futurecommerce. That's getdivvy, D-I-V-V-Y, .com/futurecommerce. This podcast is brought to you by 3Kit. Today's discerning brands are looking for ways to gain share by bringing innovative, configurable products to market. And that's easier said than done. But the good news is, there's 3Kit. From visualizing products in beautiful 3D and augmented reality, to integrating with your existing tech stack and representing 100% of your product catalog, 3Kit can scale an entire visual product experience for your brand. And this means that you can deliver engaging, immersive experiences that make shoppers happy to click the buy button. It's simple. When you show more, you sell more. So get started on your visual commerce journey today at 3kit.com/podcast. That's 3 spelled out, T-H-R-E-E, kit.com/podcast. TikTok feels especially difficult because the algorithm that you're engaging with is so finely tuned to you. And you're an operator, right? Trying to look outside of the things that you care about and try to put yourself in the shoes of your client. And that to me feels like, to some degree, it's like when have you ever visited YouTube incognito? It's like a wake-up call. Like, this is what the rest of the world sees. It's crazy. Yeah. This is what's broken in society. And true. Because the things that are, you know, geared around Kendall are very specific to Kendall. And I'm curious how you change your hat. Like, how do you, maybe this is kind of like where we wind up for today. We should just have you back like once a month. But like putting the different hat on, like, what's it?
It's not a bad idea.
It's a great idea, actually. if you were to figure out how, or maybe give a little bit of advice about how others are thinking about the way that they're discovering that new content, what are some of those ways that you keep your own sort of algorithmic rabbit hole from informing the decisions you're making professionally? Or do you at all? Does that even come across your mind?
That is such a great question. I do. So like, obviously, like I obviously have my own accounts for everything so that I set my algorithm for myself. But I'm also, it's also one of those things where like my algorithm lines up with a lot of what I do, not more so from like the education standpoint. Let's say like my For You page on TikTok isn't like all social things, but it's like a lot of, it's like food heavy and like recipe heavy. So that like helps obviously anyone that I really work in food. And then like same thing though, like with Graza, it's like every single big food creator is like on there. Or that it sorts itself out to be like that. And same with like restaurant accounts, which then helps like wholesale leverage or like people we want to reach out to for collabs. So it's like, I separate it, but it still bleeds into each other. And I think also it's like, but I would say when it comes to those like quirky, like you wouldn't think about this person using this product, it shows up on mine. And then it triggers me to go reach out from the brand side. Cause like I'll get hit with, example, actually there's this one TikTok account, in case they ever listen to this, her name is Jenny. The TikTok account is Peanut Butter Mochi. And her biggest video has like 3.2 million views. And it is her boyfriend cooking for her when they got back from the bar and they're like completely hammered, but he made this like gourmet meal. Like, I mean, like, the best knife chopping I have seen. Like, they're super young. I'm pretty sure they're in college or like just graduated. Like, they crush it. And so every video is just like, this is what my boyfriend cooked for me. And it's like these people are in love with him. And I was like, can I please just like from every client that like makes something food related, I was like, can I send you this, 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 and this? Like, do whatever you want. Like, brilliant. That's it. So it's like those weird videos to me where there's like videos where there's like this one couple that the girlfriend always like takes a video of her boyfriend. It's like what my boyfriend eats during the day because he eats these like insane meals. And I'm like, do you guys like olive oil? Like, do you cook a lot with it? Like just random things where I'll think about like inserting it into a conversation, because I think a lot of brands these days are, they play it too safe. Either because one, like, yeah, I get it. Like we live in a weird world. Creators can like do something stupid in a heartbeat. But if you trust them enough, they won't, I wouldn't think they would do you wrong. But I think also like, I would say with Graza and then like, Gooey as well that I mentioned last time, still eat those Gooey sandwiches with banana.
Oh yeah.
I would say like, we're not like afraid to like be weird. Like, I mean, for Graza, what did we do? Like we literally squeezed the bottle. So I'm on the fourth floor of the building and Andrew, the co-founder, he was downstairs on the sidewalk with a hot pan. If you go to the Graza,
I saw that. Yeah.
And we literally squeezed the bottle from the fourth floor. I was scared. Oh my God. I was like, I'm going to get arrested. Something's going to happen. I'm like, Grace, don't kill me. And like, yeah, I was literally squeezing olive oil from the fourth floor while people were walking by. And I'm like, I really hope I don't ruin this person's outfit. And then Andrew like cracked an egg in a hot pan. Span's just like screaming at me from the sidewalk. And so it's like, we're not afraid to like just do things and have random people do things for us either. So
take more risks.
Yeah,
I think there's like, there's definitely a happy medium of it, because the taking more risks on, you know, on the brand account, you know, you sort of end up with, you know, horny brand Twitter, and that's not a thing that I think that anyone's
brand Twitter, don't even. So, okay. To be fair, I would say Graza, we don't play into horny brand Twitter. We do, but we don't, because like not to, I don't know. There's ways for us to have fun with it. Like people do make like sexual innuendos about the bottle, but like we play into it. Like there is one video too. Like we have that as something we use for TikTok, because of course, like there's one video that it was slow motion of Andrew like putting a bottle in like buns really slowly. And like, it's just like too graphic, but like people caught on. We didn't even have to like say anything. It was just slow motion.
Yeah. You didn't have to be like, get the joke, guys. Everybody gets the joke.
We didn't need to say anything. People were just like writing every single comment that you would want to hold, that you kind of want to see, but you're also like, we know this is weird, but let us have fun with it. But like there was no hate. It was all just like, it was all like not suitable for work, like all day long. But yeah, so
there's a line, right? There's a line, and I think that testing the boundary is certainly natural. I think when
like Mother Butter,
I mean, that's over the line. Yeah.
There was no line. Clear-cut examples of over the line out there. I feel like taking risks though is the key, and like you need the right people internally. I want to get back to something you said a minute ago, and I know we're running short on time, but you said you shouldn't just have one person run social. You should have multiple people run social, but it sounds like you and Andrew are kind of crushing it together. And I guess my question for you is like, for the brands that can't necessarily afford it, is it better to sort of like internally source it and like have multiple people involved? Is it better to fractionalize it? Like how do you get scrappy with your social account these days, especially when that is kind of looked down on in some ways? It's like the old way of doing it. Like what's the new scrappy in social? Yeah.
It's such a good question, because I'll do like it's not even like a then and now or before and after thing, but it's like, I remember still when I started on like my first brand, which I'm still on, it's Canopy. They sell humidifiers. And like that was like my first introduction, right? Into like pre-launch brand, brand social. Like, I was just learning so much. And so, like, I was lucky where, like, it was super scrappy, like Google Sheets for influencer management and all this stuff. So, like, I know how to work on both ends. Like, now we just got onboarded onto, like, a big influencer platform. So now it's, like, it's just insane to see, like, the difference of, like, how long you can be scrappy for. I think it does go, like, the one thing being that I am on some occasions, like, the one person on social, but I do have the resources because now I've made it clear that, like, if we want this to be great, it can't just be me or whoever it is. So, yeah, I would say, like, the new scrappy is, like, you know, I think one question that a friend texted me the other day who owns a company was, hey, I'm looking for, like, a junior coordinator, like, maybe they're, like, fresh out of college or anything like that. But it's like, should they live here or should they live somewhere or can they live somewhere else? Hmm. Like, is remote work, like, for social good or bad? Because he wants content creation and he has a location.
That makes sense.
I would say, like, the biggest leverage right now is, like, if you can get scrappy with it, I would always aim to make sure that person is, like, within living vicinity of majority of the team. So then that you can make sure that, like, you guys can create things together. Like, I would say, like, the reason in my eyes that a lot of the concepts that I thought about, or Andrew or Grace or really anyone for Graza at least has been able to work, is because we literally are all, like, a 10-minute ride from one another. And, like, the office is literally down the street in Williamsburg. Like we're able to be together. And like, it like, goes to show, too. I mean, even same when I go to the Canopy office, like, we did a huge photo shoot on Wednesday. Like, and everyone was there. So I would say one, scrappiness is, like, vicinity. Like, remote sounds great, but, like, you'd actually be better if they could live near you. And then two, I would say, yeah, I think, like, one, it's looking at your own budget and then saying, like, okay, cool. Like, do we actually need this thing? Like, can we move it over to social and, like, start hiring out and contracting? Like, I have a few creators that I oversee on multiple accounts who are on retainer for, like, let's call it, like, 5 to 8 videos per month, ranging from, like, whether it's education on, like, certain things, or it's, like, recipe development or anything like that, that only helps me leverage the other content I want to focus on. So that's not, like, hey, like, taking time from the founder or, like, anything like that. I think that also opens up, like, a whole nother discussion around, like, founders being on, like, TikTok accounts or running TikTok accounts, or I think that's scrappy, right? Like, founders starting their own TikTok account for the brand and, like, they're the face. At the same time, I think there are so many brands who crush it on that front, and I can think of so many off the top of my head. Longevity wise, I don't see it being a great thing, because essentially it's like, if you keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger on something like TikTok, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, cool. It's like, I know Kendall because of blank, or I know Kendall's brand because she's always on TikTok or whatever. And then it's like, hey, I quit. Oh, well, I only like the brand because of her. So, like, right? So it's like the same idea of building.
It's true. That's a limiter to your future success. So one that comes to mind, Brian, is a mutual friend of ours, Melissa Benashai, who started doing Bake My Melissa's.
TikTok. I literally got here like 2.5 years ago.
So oh, really? Nice. Oh, she's like one of the best people.
I had a client who did a podcast with her. Well, he had a podcast, and we went to her office.
We go back years, and I think it was like at the beginning of the pandemic, she started doing like these making salad videos on TikTok. And it's like, algorithmically, she's kind of been, you know, pigeonholed into being the salad lady on Twitter or on TikTok. Yeah. And it's a shame because the brand account is now all salad. The cupcake company. But you can't, like, Melissa has to do those videos. It's not the same if it's not her. And that's certainly one of those, like, it's a double-edged sword, being founder-led on your social both ways. And I think also algorithmically, like, we're just beginning to understand that you kind of get guided into a certain type of content, and that's the what people expect from you. Very few are able to like break out of that, you know. Although some have done so too. Yeah.
Like we have it with like, but I would say it actually works. It either works, like you said, double-edged sword, works against you or works for you. Mm. I would say like for us, if you go on the account, like every like video that ever hit over 100,000, 250K, 500K, every time olive oil and ice cream.
Wow. It's funny. That's the one person I said, what brands are you, you know, are you getting excited about recently? And where did you find them? And they said, oh my gosh, I'm in love with this brand. I found it at my local like corner curio shop in Virginia. And it's this olive oil and I put it on my ice cream. And I'm like, is it Graza? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, how?
I was at a you know, soft services, body care company.
Yeah. Yes, okay, of course.
I was with Rebecca because she had
Rebecca,
Friday. Yeah. And like a few of us were there and there just ended up being a lot of people who either like you knew online, but like haven't met in real life yet. And I was overhearing a conversation. It was on a rooftop. So it was like right behind me. And someone was like, oh, I really just love like how like Graza's done everything. And I'm like, hello, like, wait.
Like, nice to meet
but
you.
But it's just insane because they don't even work in this.
Right.
And so that's why I feel like, I won't lie, like some people are, I love everyone I work with so, so much. So to all my clients who might be listening to this, I love you. But like at the same time though, it's one of those things where Graza to me is like this unicorn because, and Grace and I actually spoke about this the other day when we were together, like it's just like so insane. It's just something that like we've had for years. Like it's a product that sits in everyone's kitchen.
Yeah.
It's just like everything works.
I think you're touching on a really interesting point and we'll actually wrap it up with this, Kendall. It's been amazing having you back on. We don't do it enough. Let's do it more. There's an opportunity here where I think there's like two sets of success in social, it seems right now with new brand launches. There's the sort of success where you start to see the feedback from industry insiders, people that you know, validating that the thing that you need, that you've made should exist in the world or that you've done it well. But that's not enough to be commercially successful. The next level of success is when it goes beyond that realm and you become surprised yourself that other people, like the real world is validating what you've created, not Twitter, not TikTok, but like real everyday ordinary people. And if when you get there, that's when you realize like you've actually done your job. It's not the other thing.
It's something you said earlier, which was like people said it was such a proof point when they saw it on the shelf. And I think that's something that, I mean, the next conversation I'd love to have with you is like, how does IRL and social like work together?
I think there's like a whole thing.
Yes.
Around like, how do we like help velocities? Like, I think there's this huge conversation around like, oh, well you're on shelf, but like social can't really do anything.
Yeah. Think again.
Well, that'd be great to have for the next time. Kendall, awesome to have you. Is it still Flexible Foodie? Where can people find you online?
It is Flexible Foodie. I'm going to see if I can get it changed on Twitter, but we'll see. Flexible Foodie for now.
If you need a Twitter handle broker, let me know. I've got a person for you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Future Commerce. You can find more podcasts from Future Commerce and other Future Commerce properties, including Decoded and our newest episode of Visions, which is out now on all platforms. You can get all of them in one convenient place, futurecommerce.fm. Thank you for listening. And hey, commerce is a catalyst for change in whose world? Your world, the world around you. And maybe if we all did that, we'd have a better world to begin with. Thank you for checking us out. What happened there at the end? Thank you for listening.
Awesome.